that's the thing that happens to you. You'll do anything for a diagnosis that could have some potential treatment. Because right. That's the worst thing, is limbo.
She's bold. She's sassy. She's a woman over 50 living a life she designed on purpose with purpose. And now here's your host of Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned podcast, Shelly Dryman.
Welcome to this episode of Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned. My name is Shelly. I am your host for this podcast. And if you are a first-time listener, welcome. And if you've been a long-time listener of mine, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really appreciate your support. Before we get started on this episode, I want to remind you that we have a Facebook group, Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned. I'll drop the link down in the show notes. We have over 1,200 amazing and beautiful women over the age of 50. So I encourage you to join us for support, motivation, and a ton of resources to make this phase of your life the absolute best it can be. My interview with Anne has four parts, and it was truly an amazing interview because Anne is very vulnerable and talks about her journey at a time where she was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder and almost died of lithium poisoning. This led her on a 5-year journey to wellness. And she tells her story in this 4-part series. And she also teaches us how to advocate for ourselves with the medical profession. So I encourage you to look down in the show notes where Anne has given us so many resources to use. And if you find that any one of these 4 episodes is beneficial to someone, please share it. I would really appreciate it. All right, on to my interview with Anne.
So I got divorced. I was only married about 5 years. And it was a rough marriage. Neither of us were people who should have, at that point in time, been married to anyone, much less each other. But of course, it seems like that's who you'll seek out.
Yeah.
So after my divorce, I certainly, before this time, it wasn't like this was the first time I'd kind of fallen apart, but this seemed like a little bit worse. And so I ended up moving from the house that we'd been living in with my mom, and it was my dog and I, and I was in rough shape. And so I had been in marketing for a long time. I actually started out, I went to law school. Started there. Yeah. And never practiced. It was never my deal. And then got into marketing, did that. And then when I got married, I thought, well, I had been in such an intense career that I wanted something a little more mellow. And I went to massage therapy school. So I was going to be a therapist wife and a massage therapist. It was going to be great. So I'd been practicing massage for a while. And during my marriage, I had done that as well. And then, like I said, I was falling apart. I was just not doing well. And I moved in with my mom, and she started taking me. My mom is a therapist, I should add that. And she started taking me to psychiatrists. And up until this time, there'd been antidepressants, there'd been some treatment for ADHD, that kind of thing in my life, but nothing like this. So my mom believed that I was bipolar. And so she took me to a couple of psychiatrists. We ended up with one who she worked with a lot, and after talking, he agreed with her observations, I guess. And
Okay, so can I ask you real quickly, did you feel you were exhibiting the tendencies of someone that was manic depressive or
no?
Okay.
And I will tell you though, because it's funny because I was just gonna say, I didn't really ever think I was bipolar, but I was so flippin' miserable. Yeah. I would have done anything.
Okay.
That gave me And I think that at some point here, I will talk about the misdiagnosis of bipolar, but my mom had some examples, and after, later on, I even asked my sister about a couple of things, and she was like, no, and I certainly felt depressed, I will tell you that, I felt as depressed as could be. Yeah. There were times when I was seeing the psychiatrist, I begged him for electroshock therapy, ECT, because I wanted anything to make me feel better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, okay, you say I'm bipolar, you got a drug that'll fix it, okay, I'll go along. So we started down that path. And this is 2000, 9-ish, I would say. Mm-hmm. So 2009 and 10 were spent trying the entire catalog of drugs for bipolar, and not just bipolar, because he was a guy who really liked cocktails, and he would mix, they used old anticonvulsives now, and then antipsychotics, mood stabilizers, antidepressants. So he would come up with these cocktails. Most of them would kind of work for a short time, which now looking back, I totally believe was placebo effect. But many of them made me much worse. Much, much worse.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine.
Some of them would cause me to exhibit what I would say were manic tendencies. They would make me just, you know. And even then I think, you know, I never felt like this on my own.
I mean, it's so, not funny, but it's kind of funny when you're.
It is. I know. It's crazy. So I was just not getting better. And it was like frustrating everybody. And so I think it was probably 2010. I end up in his office. My mom's there again. And my mom went to a lot of these appointments. And I'm in my mid-40s at this point. I should add that. So I'm ready to kill myself and my dog, because that was often a theme for me, because and it's not uncommon that I couldn't stand the thought of what would happen to my dog if I weren't here. So it was like, and it was total suicidal ideation at that point, but I was certainly thinking about it. So he's like, well, I guess we have to pull out the big guns, and he put me on lithium. So lithium's a hell of a drug, to quote Rick James. It's very difficult. It has a lot of potential side effects. You have to be very careful about your water intake. You have to watch other organs in your body. And not only did he have me on that, he still had me on an antidepressant and a mood stabilizer at this point in time. So I was super med compliant, stopped taking any, you know, NSAIDs. I didn't drink. I was really good about it. And in the beginning, once again, it felt like, okay, maybe we have an answer here. Maybe I am bipolar. Okay, if we've got anything that'll work, I will take it. So monolithium, dealing with that. And I'm working as a massage therapist, and now we're in 2011. And I don't feel great, but I don't feel terrible. Yeah. And honestly, that seemed pretty good. It seemed good enough right then anyway. So in 2011, I started to feel sleepy. And that was the first symptom. And I would be so sleepy that one of the first times this happened, I decided to lie down on my table before a client, and I woke up with them leaving 20 minutes into what they thought I was in the room with another client. I was in there asleep.
Oh, wow.
And them leaving the door would wake me up. I was like, oh. And then I would actually be massaging people and my head would drop. I mean, it was just, it was insane. I'd never felt tired like that. And I thought, this is kind of weird. And I didn't have insurance too. I should add that at this point. This is back when you could not have insurance still. And I didn't. I had a client. He was a nice guy. He was an older kind of guy. And, one day he said to me, you've been sick too much. He said, this isn't right. Something's up with you. You need to figure out what's wrong with you. So that's the end of 2011, beginning of 2012. Beginning of 2012, I started to have, it was some pretty severe body pain. And that coupled with the sleepiness. And I remember I went, it was in March of 2012, because it was for my birthday. I went and had a massage. And I asked for just a really light massage, and I couldn't move for days after that massage. And that was just weird, because I used to get some serious massage work done for my own self when I was doing massage. So my lease was up in April, and I realized it would not probably be prudent at that moment to sign another lease, because I didn't know what was going on. But I knew I was beginning to realize something really wasn't right. I'm now uninsured, sick, and not working, and living with my mom. We went to a family friend who's a doctor, and he saw me, and he said, well, it looks like fibromyalgia. And certainly, fibromyalgia made a lot of sense. I couldn't see that. The symptoms seemed to be there. He gave me something to take, and Lyrica. I think we tried Lyrica the first time then. And so I left, and it was just kind of this limbo of I don't know what to do exactly. And one day, I was in so much pain, my mom said, come on, we're going to the emergency room. And I'm like, okay. So go to the emergency room, and they weren't particularly kind, because I was basically showing up with no insurance. But the really great thing that happened with that visit was that hospital told me then that they would allow me to use their doctors, a lot of their diagnostic procedures for free, basically. So they had like a because I didn't have any income. So that helped. And so I found that I could see doctors in the practice. And I went to a doctor. The first one, that was just a giant waste of time. And then I found out my mom's doctor was in that same practice. And I said, so can I see any doctor? I thought I had to see the one they assigned. And they're like, no, you can see any doctor. So I started with her. She's an internist. And she said, well, I want to send you to a rheumatologist. So this is when I started to find out that when you go to a specialist, you're going to wait 3 months at the minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 3 months in pain, sleeping all the time. And back then, so naive, thinking this guy's going to fix it.
Oh, well.
I would be forced from that kind of thinking in not too much time. So I get in there. Yes. So I get in there for the appointment, and he was quite unbelievable. He asked me a question, he interrupted me, and he didn't stop talking for half an hour. At one point, my mom tried to say something, and he said, don't you interrupt me. And it was this tirade. He talked about Obamacare. He talked about all this stuff. And then he did this real cursory exam. He's like, yeah, you have fibromyalgia. And he said, well, there's this treatment that could help you, but you can't afford that. And it's like, well, thanks. And he's like, so, you know, it was basically like, sorry, you got fibromyalgia. Move. That's the thing. Exercise, move. Just, you know, hey, middle-aged lady, go home. And so that was, of course, a giant punch in my gut because it was definitely not the help I needed. So go back to the internist, and she says, yeah, I'm not 100% surprised that you had that experience. And I'm like, well, is there anybody else? And she's like, well, no, he's really the guy. He's the guy in this city, and I live in a fairly good-sized city. She says, so there's a woman who's about an hour away, and she runs a little institute. And she said, she's really something. So I'm like, okay. So again, I wait to go to this lovely woman's institute. Finally, the day comes, and I go. And it was one of the most thorough medical examinations I have ever had. I could get my blood work. And at this point, I'm bag borrowing, stealing, running up credit cards, whatever I can to pay for whatever medical care I can get. At this point, I still don't have any insurance.
Well, you're probably still feeling really crappy. I mean, I'm
getting worse. And this thing about moving, I couldn't explain to them. I can't. I'm not avoiding activity. I can't explain to you how I couldn't get it through to them, how horribly I felt.
Well, you could barely stay awake, so you certainly weren't going to go out and start running.
It's a headache. So I went to her office, and she was really amazing. And certainly, she said to me, we don't call it fibromyalgia until we have ruled everything else out. And when I went back to the hospital with my blood work order, they were like, whoa. I was like, yes, I gave a gallon today. She did. And I really appreciated that because it is so easy to just put us in that bin of fibromyalgia. And then worse yet, put you in the bin and then say, well, there's nothing really wrong with you. You know, and so one day, I think it was either my second or third appointment with her, when she was still trying to figure everything out, I said, I feel like my hands and feet are in a vise and every cell in my body is going to explode. That's how I explained the pain. And she said, okay, we have to look seriously at fibromyalgia. So, okay, she diagnoses me with fibro, sets up this whole protocol that she has and everything. And I'm like, okay, so we're going to do this. And unfortunately, it's the way it was, especially then, it's like, well, there's Lyrica, there's supplements, there's exercise, and learning to manage this. So I'm like, okay, but I can. And at this point too, I had filed for disability because I needed something. I needed some way to survive here. And of course I was turned down because the first time, especially non-specific. So I had to go to court and do all of that during this while I'm sick. So I'm in the process of filing for disability, process of dealing with all of these fibro symptoms, my life as a fibromyalgia person, it kind of made sense, you know, and after all the stress I'd been through and the bipolar diagnosis, it was all, you know, it's like, okay, this is how it's going to go. So into 2013, moving into there, I was eventually in 2013 in the fall, I did receive disability. So that was good. It was a year about after I'd applied. So that was helpful. And the thing is, with disability, you don't automatically get insurance. But luckily, Obamacare had happened in the ACA. So that was great. So I had some insurance. I had my disability. So, okay. So it's like, now what are we going to do? And then the new symptoms started. The new symptoms, the first thing that happened was I was falling down. And it was a very strange kind of falling. At first, it seemed kind of funny because it would feel like I was standing up and then I was on the ground. And it'd be like, I could be sitting on the couch and I would somehow fall. And it was just really weird. And then one day I took a fall and hit the hardwood floor and my head hit the hardwood floor. And suddenly it was not very funny.
Yeah.
So this began now the MRIs. And I had, because at first they had to see if I'd hurt my brain at all with that. But then they had to start figuring out, why am I falling down? And
I bet that was scary too. I mean, I would be terrified if I had all these symptoms. All of a sudden, I just start manifest these new symptoms just start coming up. That had to be really scary.
I know. I was certainly scaring people around me, but inside me, something was kind of changing, and I didn't know. And it's hard to explain that it should have probably bothered me more. One of the things, because I had anxiety, the psychiatrist was pretty liberal with the Xanax, and so that kind of helped me to stay pretty mellow. Eventually, from falling down, and I had the MRIs, and then so I'm going to go to a neurologist. Now we're going to start with, we've gone from rheumatology, and Now we're thinking maybe that rheumatologist wasn't quite right on, because this is different again. So I was needing a cane to walk. That's where it first started, because of the falling down, just to help me to make sure, because getting in and out of the car was definitely a prime time for me to fall, things like that. And then my sleep increased. That continued to just get worse, just more sleeping. The pain, when I would go through the pain and the headaches, it was just, I have somewhere I've written down. And honestly, I found that was a good thing. I wrote a lot down while this was going on. That was kind of the good thing. It wasn't like I was comatose. I could write things down. And I mean, I'd always remember every last detail, but I have a lot written down. And there was one day I wrote down about the pain. And when I found it, I just bawled. I mean, it was like I had forgotten how horrible.
Yeah.
It was such a burning, hideous pain. Gonna go to the neurologist. Of course, I have to wait months for a neurologist appointment. I wait for him, and we're there, and it's getting weird at this point. And I'm gonna say this detail, I can't quite 100% remember. If I went through everything, I could put it together, but a new thing started, and it started around the time of the first neurologist. I was lying in bed one night, and I had a television up on a dresser. And I'm watching TV, and all of a sudden the TV goes, meow. And so I'm like, oh, what the heck is going on? You know? And so I got up, and I kind of looked, and it's like, oh, it seems okay. So I lay back down, and the TV goes, meow. And I thought, ghost, I'm going to bed. I'm not going to think about this. I'll look at the TV in the morning.
Yeah.
And I look at the TV, and the TV's fine. And I'm like, but like I said, I was growing more detached. And so I was like, that's really weird. So I don't really say much about it. I didn't say anything to anybody because it was like, that's just really weird. So
that is sort of an odd response to have to that.
Yes, it was.
Not weird. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, but it was like, I can't even figure this out. Everything. My whole world was so completely coming apart. It was like, there's one more thing. The TV's tipping. So then one day I was at the store and my mom said to me, you're leaning. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm leaning. And so, and she didn't really clarify what she meant. And then not long after, my sister was hanging a picture for me. I was standing back and saying, you know, down, down on the left, down on the left. And she's like, no. And I said, yes, it's because you're standing right by it. So she's like, mom. And my mom comes in and looks at the picture. And my mom looked at me and she said, do you think that picture looks even? And I said, yes. And she said, it's not. So now we realize my vision is tilted at a 30 degree angle about. My whole world is tilted. And so that's a weird symptom. And around this time, I don't know if I had the walker yet. I would eventually go to a walker because just getting around was...
Oh, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah, yeah. The falling and the vision and everything. So I went to the neurologist and he walks in the room and he goes, so what do you want me to do? That was his greeting. And he wasn't I certainly had bigger dicks I dealt with, but he was just sort of like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, anything, something, what? And he's like, well, your my eyes clear. He said, what do you want me to do? And he's like, well, what's going on? So I tell him, and I said, I'm about fibromyalgia. And he says, I don't believe in fibromyalgia. It's like, well, it certainly seems to be believing in me. You know what I mean? It's like, well, thank you for dismissing. And he had some flippant reason why he didn't believe in fibromyalgia. Okay. So at one point, I'm sitting on the table, and he had me do some walking back and forth. I would get really used to that routine. So I'm sitting on the table, and he's overwriting. He goes, okay, jump off the table. And I look at my mom like, why? And she looks at him, and he's like looking out of the corner of his eye to see if I'll jump off the table. Like he's trying to see if I'm faking. And what is so crazy? Yes. And my mom said, she can't jump off the table. And he's like, oh, she can use the stairs. And what is so crazy about that is I had disability at this point. I had insurance. There was nothing for me to gain by going to this neurologist except that I so desperately wanted to get better. Yeah, that was all I wanted, but that was not how I was treated. Left there, and by this point, I mean, it's no longer the gut punch it once was to have these kind of appointments, because that just happened. And I went back to the internist, and she said, I want to send you to a neuro-ophthalmologist, which was a specialty I did not even know existed. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And there was another neurologist that my mom had gone to. My mom said, could she go see her? And just thinking that maybe if we had someone who would actually listen, because we have, my mom is a therapist, worked in several doctor's offices as like a triage for postpartum depression. Uh-huh. And two of the doctors she worked with who were OBGYNs, but they went to medical school and they had family members with MS, and they just kept saying, this sounds like MS. Mm-hmm. And certainly I had read, and they confirmed, you can have MS and not have the lesions yet. You can be starting without that. And so that's what we were kind of wondering, was could I be pre-lesion MS? Because this, if it quacks like a duck, man, this was quacking like MS, the falling, the vision, all of this stuff just seemed classic. And I asked my internist, I said, have you considered MS? And she's like, well, the guy, the doctor, said his name. She said, he's the MS guy in town. So she said, I'm going to the best in town. Yeah, they're just dismissing me. So went to this other neurologist, and she was something. But I have to say, and this is just my own little case study, this is, I can't say this overall, I definitely found when I did go to see women, they may have not been awesome or perfect, but they always listened. And I never got the feeling they didn't believe me.
Yeah.
I felt like, like this woman, she barked everything at me, and I'm standing across the exam room from her, and she said, look at me. I'm looking at her, and she said, look at me straight. And I said, I am. And she said, you think you're looking at me straight? And I said, yeah. And she comes over and she conks my head, because my head was like this all the time.
Oh, because you're compensating for you.
Yeah, trying to straighten up my vision. And she said, okay. So she thought I had myasthenia gravis. That was her guess. So she said, keep the appointment with the neuro-ophthalmologist, but I'm going to test you for myasthenia gravis. I didn't have myasthenia gravis, thank God. I mean, but you know what? That's the thing that happens to you. You'll do anything for a diagnosis that could have some potential treatment. Because that's the worst thing, is limbo, is everybody saying. So I went to the neuro-ophthalmologist. He was my next stop. The first thing he wanted to do was have me do a sleep study. He thinks this is sleep apnea. Now, I know a lot of people with sleep apnea, and none of them use walkers. So it's like, really, really, this is insane to me. His office is in the sleep clinic, so that may be part of why he does this. So I was just thinking, this just seems crazy. And then he wanted me to see a neuropsychologist. So I thought, well, okay, because at this point in time, I can barely finish a sentence. I can start a sentence and completely lose track of what I'm saying. That was really scary to me, because my brain was if I had self-worth, it came from that. And it was like I was losing the one thing about me that I thought was kind of okay.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, I couldn't carry on a conversation. I couldn't, I could rally together. But I was really starting to be afraid I had some kind of early dementia. in my 40s, you know? And so I was all for that neuropsychologist because I did want to know if that was indeed a potential thing. And through all of this, I've been seeing my psychiatrist.
I was just going to say, you're still on this whole medication, right?
Yes. And at this point, he says, I'm really, you know, this is really hard. And he's like, well, I hate to use the term situational depression. He said, but I think anybody in your situation would be really depressed. And I'd say, I'm really anxious. Is there a chance we could do something like Buspar, true anti-anxiety med? And he's like, well, and he would always, he kind of appealed to that ego part of me because he would always like talk to me, you know, and just draw these short chain molecules and this kind of thing and trying to tell me, you know, why he didn't do this or why this would work this way. And I liked that in the beginning because it fed my ego. And so he's telling me why that wouldn't be a good thing fit in there. He's like, I'll bump up your Xanax. So I was like, okay. Okay. That's, I don't want to, but okay. That's you're the guy, you know? And so he asked me, I told him about the sleep study and I said, I didn't want to do it. And he's like, well, why not? And I said, because it seems ridiculous. And he's like, well, then it's something checked off, you know? And I'm like, honestly, do you think this is sleep apnea? It's like, yeah. So I did acquiesce and do the sleep study. I don't have sleep apnea. I snore a little bit when I lie on my back, like most people. So not a surprise, but just kind of in the state I was in, that was a pretty big pain in the butt to do, to have that stuck in there, but whatever. So I did that. Sleep apnea is ruled out. I go to the neuropsychologist. So I will remember that day forever. Whatever else I've forgotten during those years, I will remember that day because that kind of pain will haunt you the rest of your life. And mind you, in all of this, I can't take any like ibuprofen, aspirin. I can take Tylenol because of the lithium that I'm on. So as for pain relief, my options were pretty limited. I could take Vicodin and I don't react well to Vicodin, which is good. I mean, I'm really glad. But so my options for pain relief were limited. And so I sat in that office and these tests, these memory tests were just, they have you, you know, memorize a series of numbers and they come back to it again. And you have to try it. I can still remember the pain in my body in that appointment. And I finally had to tap out and just say, I can't do anymore. And he knew that I was not in good shape. And that was certainly allowed. But then, so I came back and I finished the testing. It was not great, but it was better than that time. Got it all done. So I go for the results. And he said, well, I can tell that you did your best. It's like, well, yeah, of course I did. I do well on tests. That's my thing in life. You know? It's like, yes, I like to excel. You know, that's me, you know. And it never occurred to me. But once again, it's that implication of you're not faking this, you know. And it's like, no, I'm not. I went, so, and he did a personality or a psych workup at the end of it. And I know what those are and I know what they're asking for. I've been around that world enough, you know, and I was copping pretty seriously to major depressive disorder. I knew that. He said, well, if you didn't sit here and tell me that you don't have an exact plan, I'd be a lot more worried about you, which I'm not even going to get into that, but he should have been much more worried about me. So he said, well, he said, you don't have dementia. He said, it's not there's no early Alzheimer's or anything like that. He said, your cognition is fine. I can tell you're in pain, but he said, that's fine. But I can't rule out hypochondria or conversion disorder. Now, at this point, I'm just so freaking happy I'm not going to, you know, be losing my brain that I didn't really let that settle in. And I didn't even know what conversion disorder was then. My mom did. And I could tell she was kind of upset hearing that. And basically what that is, if people don't know, hypochondria is obviously that I've created this in my head. Conversion disorder is that my bipolar is causing this physical illness. My mental disorder is causing a physical disorder. And this was just the first person to actually say it out loud. I think it had been thought before and it was like, great. So there were other things with the vision thing with that neuro-ophthalmologist, which do not really bear on this. So I'm still playing Dr. Rodeo. I still have nothing conclusive. And this woman that I know who has vasculitis, which is a terrible disease, and she's an incredible fighter because most people, her prognosis was years, she's lived years beyond what they ever expect. Uh-huh. So she said to me, it sounds like you have vasculitis maybe. And I'm like, well, at this point, oh yeah, okay. You got an idea?
Why not?
Why not? There's gotta be something, right?
Uh-huh.
So Unfortunately, the four basic symptoms of vasculitis, almost everybody who's not well could fit into those. They are so vague and nonspecific. But I thought, well, I'm going to try. And she said, I see this internist. He's really good. I wish you could see him. He's not taking new patients. And she told me his name. And I said, I think that's my dad's doctor. And she said, well, then you could see him. So I'm like, okay, whatever, you know. And it, at this point, we're now at the end of 2014. And I'm using the walker all the time. I'm sleeping close to 20 hours a day. My vision is really messed up. I could throw up at the drop of a hat. I mean, it was hard. I lost a lot of weight. I gained a lot of weight in the beginning from all those drugs, lost a bunch of weight as this was going on. I would eat basically oranges. I was thirsty all the time. So I would eat oranges all the time, and I drank, can't remember, there was something I drank all the time, a specific thing that I know, it was Sierra Mist. And a lot of people who are on chemo will drink Sierra Mist. It's like 7-Up or whatever. So living on Sierra Mist, and it keeps you from being nauseous. So that helped with that. So I'm in pretty bad shape. My endocrine system is starting to shut down. I could go, it was really weird. I would never sweat. My hair, which I have always been plenty oily, my skin was so dry. And I could go weeks without washing my hair, which is has been unheard of my whole life. Endocrine system messed up, everything. So I have really no grand hopes that this guy is going to be any different than any of the rest. So I gather up all my records and I go in for this appointment, and we go. I did find interesting that the better doctors, for lack of a better word, they tended to do their own vitals. They tended to be the ones, they listened to your heart. They did your blood pressure. It was like they wanted to see it for themselves. They didn't want to just read a paper that someone else had written down. They really interacted with you. And you could tell it was so they could know. They had sort of that scientific mind. They weren't just rote. So he was like, he's kind of older guy. He goes through, he does all of the intake and everything. And we go in his office. My mom's there. And we sit down. And he kind of let me tell, you know, basically what's going on. And he said, well, I read through your charts last night, which, let me tell you, until this point, every one of those specialists I went to came in with a piece of paper I filled out in the lobby. Nobody looked beyond that. They might have looked at an MRI or whatever. This guy actually sat down and read everything that we got to him. Mm-hmm. And he said, you have lithium poisoning.
Thank you for joining Shelley today on Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast. Be sure to join the ever-growing community of like-minded women on Facebook. That's the Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned Facebook group. Join today.